Hi, everyone. Hope you're all doing well. Welcome to another Chatham House Twitter space. Thank you all very much for joining me. I think we're in for a great discussion today. My name is Leah Dehaan. I am the project manager for Accept at Chatham House, and I also lead the program Social Inclusion Research. So today's Twitter space is part of our cross-border conflict evidence, policy, and trends research program, for which Chatham House is one of the research leads. And this program is funded by UK Aid from the UK government. All the research that makes up this programme beyond Chatham House spans a wide geography and it includes many different organisations working together. And what binds us really is that we're all looking at cross-border or transnational conflict with a focus on what governments across the world can do to prevent, mitigate or address it. At Chatham House, our Accept research includes three different case studies and they are in three different geographies. So the first is Sudan's borderlands with Ethiopia and Libya, where we're looking at gold and the contestation of land and its agricultural products. The second, Libya, where we are looking at human smuggling and trafficking across East and West Africa into Libya. And the third, Iraq and the Levant, where we are looking at a number of supply chains, including pharmaceuticals, narcotics, flows of money and human smuggling. So it's this last case study that we're going to be touching on today. And so we'll be talking through some of these specific supply chains. So that brings me, excitingly, to introducing today's brilliant speaker, Lina Khatib. Lina is the director of the Middle East and North Africa program at Chatham House, and she's been leading the Accept research at Chatham House as the principal investigator and as co-lead for the Iraq and the Levant case study, meaning I think that we're in for a very interesting discussion today. Welcome, Lina. Thank you so much for joining me. Can you hear me okay?
Hello. Yes, I can hear you now.
The first question. In your Accept research over the last couple of years, you've been looking at a large geographical area. So what I was hoping to ask you is if you could talk through the interconnections between the various conflict economies and the transnational conflict systems that make up the regional dynamics present in Syria and Lebanon.
The idea behind the research is, first of all, conflict systems in the area that we are researching, which extends actually from Lebanon into Syria, Jordan, into Iraq and elsewhere, the conflict systems are interconnected so that one thing may happen in one country, but then it has an effect on what happens in another country because of the links in the conflict systems. When we talk about the links in the conflict systems from a political economy perspective, we are talking about actors that interconnect, they trade with one another. Sometimes it's the same actors who physically move from one place to another. We're also talking about financial and economic transactions that happen across those countries so that, for example, you have banks in Lebanon holding money for some of the, let's say, militias in Syria, as well as the militias in Iraq. You have suitcases full of cash landing on planes in Beirut coming from Baghdad, and this money is going to fund, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon. And so the idea is you can't really just say we're going to address conflict in Lebanon or conflict in Syria or conflict in Iraq without also being mindful of how the conflict dynamics in those countries are affected and interconnected because of this connectivity that I talked about in the political economy. But of course, interconnectivity is not limited to the political economy. It's just that our project looks at the interlinkages in the political economy. Some of the other dynamics that one can flag as examples include the drug trade, the pharmaceutical trade, but also the flow of people across those countries. So that's, in a nutshell, the landscape that we're looking at.
What I was thinking in particular, and you've touched on this a little bit already, is that maybe we could talk through some of the specific conflict supply chains that you've been working on. In particular, I wanted to ask you if you could touch a little bit on the conflict supply chain of human smuggling and why in particular you chose to focus on this and what the main conclusions were from your research.
Okay, when it comes to human smuggling, this is research done in collaboration with researchers who have been looking at this quite closely, mainly in Lebanon and Syria. It's an area that has been under-researched in general because there's been so much attention to things like the flow of drugs, but not enough attention to the flow of people and how, unfortunately, people come to be used as a commodity by conflict actors who smuggle people between Lebanon and Syria in both directions and make money from the human smuggling. So when you look at this process, you realize that the actors involved in the human smuggling are very pragmatic. So on the Syrian side, you have actors like the 4th Division of the Syrian Army. And this particular actor is also, as it happens, the main actor involved in the smuggling of drugs between Syria and Lebanon. And you also find that there are local smuggling networks that operate both in Syria and Lebanon, who make money from moving people back and forth. On the Lebanese side, you see that in addition to these local smuggling networks, you also have Hezbollah play an important role in also engaging in human smuggling. Now, of course, those who know the politics of Syria and Lebanon will know that Hezbollah and the 4th Division of the Syrian Army are on the same side politically. They are supporters of the Assad regime. But when it comes to who these actors are involved in smuggling, especially Hezbollah, actually the smuggling extends to people who are politically against the Syrian regime, meaning these are the people that Hezbollah is also sometimes smuggling if it would net Hezbollah significant money as a result. And so here you see that the financial gain from human smuggling, in a way, is more of a priority than politics. Hezbollah seems to be very pragmatic, smuggling people back and forth, even if those people disagree with Hezbollah politically. And at the same time, there have been cases of, in the process of being smuggled, people end up kidnapped by some of the conflict actors for ransom. And again, here we have a situation in which people don't necessarily have to be opposed politically to Hezbollah or the Syrian regime for them to actually be kidnapped for ransom. And this is why it's important to look at the political economy of conflict and these connections between the two countries. Because to kind of only try to look at conflict from the perspective of politics or ideology limits our understanding to basically just looking at things from a very narrow prism, which is politics. Actually, the economic side of the story reveals that we need a much more complex framework if we are to really understand how these actors work together and how they operate in the field.
Thank you so much, Lena. I think one of the points you made in your response towards the start kind of brings us perfectly back to some of the research that you conducted last year on the conflict supply chain of Captagon. So I was asking if you could talk through this a little bit more. And in particular, and you've highlighted this a little bit, but it would be good to draw it out, is the point that there are similarities between the two conflict supply chains. Were the same actors involved? Are the same practices involved? Can you talk about this a little bit more?
What I found interesting is over the duration of the project, each time I was looking at a separate side of the political economy, you know, linkages, started with Captagon, then moved to human smuggling. But one of the interesting findings is that the routes used for smuggling Captagon are in many ways similar to the routes used for smuggling people. And the actors involved in smuggling drugs like Captagon are also similar to the actors involved in human smuggling. And I already mentioned some of those actors, namely the 4th Division of the Syrian Army and Hezbollah. Now, in Lebanon, Hezbollah remains the most powerful armed actor in the country. Of course, there is the Lebanese army, but when it comes to who actually has control over the Lebanese border with Syria, I still think, despite many efforts by the international community to strengthen border security between the two countries, the border remains porous. And Hezbollah is in charge in two different ways. One, it's in charge in a de facto way because of the number of illegal crossings between the two countries that Hezbollah and its allies use to smuggle not just drugs and sometimes people, but also all kinds of goods back and forth, either things that are sent from Lebanon, for example, subsidized wheat or subsidized fuel that are then sold in Syria, or vice versa, things that are brought from Syria into Lebanon for sale inside Lebanon, like some Iranian goods. So they are in charge of these illicit crossings, not all the crossings, but the vast majority of the illegal crossings. They are also in charge through being in cahoots with elements of the security services of the Lebanese state. So that even if you have a legal crossing and you see paperwork being kind of signed and, you know, kind of used, Hezbollah's influence in the various ministries and its influence over the customs authority means that Hezbollah can use these legal channels without being challenged. So this is who you have in terms of the actors in charge of the Captagon trade. With the Syrian side of the story, you have the 4th Division being mainly in charge of, again, the main illegal and legal crossings on the Syrian side. So this is where, when it comes to the Captagon trade, you'll see that, yes, this is an illegal drug, obviously. It is being sold and traded by these actors, and they make a lot of money from it, to the extent that some say Syria is now the new narco state in the Middle East. But at the same time, they are also trading licit goods, but in an illegal way. And this is where, in this research, yes, we look at Captagon, but the issue is not to really say this is legal and this is illegal, because again, the situation can be very complicated because of some of these dynamics that I explained, that an actor like Hezbollah, given legitimacy by the Lebanese state, may be acting in an illicit way and may be acting through licit ways as well, but for illicit goals. So it's a very complex landscape. Once more, can't overstate how important it is to pay attention to nuance, because it's very easy to kind of look at Captagon as, oh, we just need to fight this illegal trade and that's it. Let's reinforce border security, for example. But it's a lot more complicated than that.
Thank you so much, Lina. We're already turning here to our last question. Picking up on your point on nuance and how complex the different interconnections are, I think one of my main conclusions from all of this is that your ACCEPT research has a huge amount of ground to cover. So what I was wondering is, how do you see the Chatham House ACCEPT research framework of conflict supply chains giving you the tools to describe these vast geographies and the complicated dynamics?
So my colleagues at Chatham House have come up with this concept of the conflict supply chain. In particular, my colleague Tim Eaton was the first person to come up with this concept, and then others, you know, evolved it over time. All of us contributed to testing this concept on the ground and seeing what it tells us. And the idea behind the conflict supply chain is this interconnectivity between countries. Because if you're gonna fight, for example, the Captagon trade in Syria, and just look at Syria, you will miss how important a role Hezbollah plays in this supply chain, because it is like a chain. And this chain fuels conflict, because the money that Hezbollah is making and the Syrian 4th Division is making from the Captagon trade is used to support these conflict actors. These are main conflict actors. So you have the political economy of this transnational trade feeding conflict in direct and indirect ways. So it's not just about looking at, for example, the flow of weapons and looking at how things that are normally associated with war and violence are part of conflict. We're also saying the idea of these conflict actors being interconnected through the political economy reveals that they use these transactions in order to strengthen themselves, and this in turn fuels conflict. But we are also looking at what this means beyond just the conflict actors that are armed. We're also seeing, such as the example I gave about Hezbollah's influence in ministries in Lebanon, that conflict is also linked to capital states. It's not just about border regions and the armed groups operating in these border regions. It's also about non-armed entities, such as state institutions like ministries, where you have influence of these conflict actors. And over there, they work in collaboration with, for example, civil service officials. And therefore, you also have to look at, well, who else is involved in that case? And you look and see the local smuggling networks or the local drug traders, the business people involved in facilitating this. And this is why, you know, you start seeing that the picture is always about regional dynamics, not just local dynamics. It's about dynamics on the periphery, on the borders, but also how they link to capital cities. And it's also about the pragmatism of the trade and how sometimes a good can become quite lucrative and these conflict actors increase their engagement with it because it's lucrative. And again, we need to pay attention to the economic value of the supply chain across those countries, because this is one way in which conflict is sustained.
Thank you so much, Lena. That already brings us to a close, unfortunately. I've really enjoyed speaking through all of your research, and a big thank you to everyone listening today. If you're interested in learning more about Chatham House's ACCEPT research, you can find Lena's expert comment on the conflict supply chain of Captagon on the Chatham House website, as well as a whole range of other pieces from all of the three case studies. And if you have any specific questions on our ACCEPT research, you can always send Lena or I a message on Twitter. And for information on the wider research program, you can visit accept-research.org. Thank you again so much, Lena. Thank you for bearing with me on that. And to everyone listening, I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.